This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
The captive program is really our lifeline for saving this species right now because there are so few in the wild.
Just because we live in an age of science, marked by mobile computing, space exploration, and robot cars, doesn't mean that people don't still hold firm to beliefs with no scientific basis whatsoever. Case in point, rhinos are dying out, due primarily to a human appetite for the supposed healing power of their horns, even though these horns have been shown to have no medicinal properties and may even contain substances toxic to humans. Rhinoceros horns consist of keratin, a dense protein found in human hair and fingernails. But puzzlingly, they're worth more by weight than gold. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Manga Bay senior contributing editor Jeremy Hantz about the plight of two extremely rare breeds of Indonesian rhinoceros. We discuss efforts being taken to track and preserve them, and take a close look at poaching and the brisk trade in illegal rhino horns. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jeremy Hantz. He's a journalist and author and a senior contributing editor at Manga Bay. Jeremy, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So you just reported on two pieces for Manga Bay about rhinos that I want to dive into for today's show. These pieces were both from Indonesia, correct?
Yes.
So what is the difference between a Javan rhino and a Sumatran rhino? These very rare animals, and maybe you can kind of give us an overview of the efforts that are being made to save both of these species.
Sure. So the difference is, even though they're both in Indonesia, one is on the island of Java, that's the Javan rhino. The Sumatran rhino is on the island of Sumatra, and a very, very small population, maybe one or two, is on the island of Borneo. They're actually really different rhinos. So the Javan rhino is most closely related to the Indian rhinoceros. It has a single horn. It's kind of got that plate, like it looks like kind of armor on it, that is also similar to the Indian rhinoceros. So those two are the most evolutionarily, they're the closest kin. The Sumatran rhino is really unique, though. Even though it's a rhino, there's nothing else quite like it on Earth.
It's hairy, right?
It's hairy. It's the smallest rhino. It has two horns, and I would say it's the most talkative rhino. It squeaks, it squeals, it grunts. It's very when it's in captivity, it can get very affectionate with its with people. It really connects to people. It's a weird animal, but I really love this animal. But evolutionarily, it is very old. It split off from other rhinos probably about 15 million years ago. So if we lose this rhino, we lose a lot of evolutionary history. So that just means that it's super distinct as an animal from any other animal alive. It was related to the woolly rhino that used to inhabit Asia and Europe, but then that went extinct. So now it's really the only rhino that is quite like it. So yeah, that's the two differences between like their taxonomy and their physical appearance and sort of what they're like.
And both of these rhinos, like in terms of when we're saying there's not many left, there are less than three digits, right? There's under 100 of both of these species.
Yeah, the Javan rhino, and we can get into kind of what happened to it. It's down to about 50 animals. The Sumatran rhino is somewhere between like 34 and 47 is the current number. I would guess we're closer to 34, just as a hunch. But we're basically under 50 for the Sumatran. And to put this into context, that makes these two rhinos some of the most endangered mammals on the planet. They are both really on the edge of extinction. And we are in like kind of a crucial decades for these animals as to whether or not they will be able to come through this or we'll lose them forever.
So the first piece that you wrote talks about how these sniffer dogs are trying to give conservationists a better clue as to whether these rhinos actually exist in certain parks. Why don't you speak to how useful that's been?
Yeah, so this is for the Sumatran rhino, which is the one that's the weirder one, the more unusual, hairy, talkative one. And so what they did is, where we thought that there's this park called Way Cambus in southeastern Sumatra, which I've actually been to, and where they have captive Sumatran rhinos, a population there that's been absolutely vital. It's a beautiful park. It's lowlands right near the sea. There's rivers and tropical rainforests. It's got tons of biodiversity, really important place. And it was actually gazetted in part because they had a population of rhinos there. And for years we heard, you know, they said, oh, we've got, you know, maybe at first it was like, maybe we have 20 rhinos. And then it was, oh, we've got a dozen rhinos. And then sources started to say, we think we don't have any rhinos. And this has been a common issue because the Sumatran rhino is incredibly rare and really elusive. It's really hard to track. And so for the last few years, basically, my sources have been saying, look, we think that there's none left. And so what happened is the International Rhino Foundation, Nina Fashion, who's the head of that, was like, hey, why don't we just let, you know, you can't prove a negative, but let's do our due diligence. You know, we've tried camera trapping. They're not showing up in camera traps. We have patrols out. The patrols are finding nothing.
And this must be a really big park if they can't find these rhinos, because they're not small, like they're not little meerkats or something.
No, but they are famously elusive. They are really, like, if you went and stumbled on a Sumatran rhino in the wild, you're basically seeing a unicorn. You're basically, I mean, it's that hard to find. But she was like, look, let's try kind of a latch stitch effort. Let's prove that there are probably no rhinos left, and then we can put resources elsewhere. So she contacted this group called Working Dogs for Conservation, which trains dogs to smell specific scents and then sets them out in the wild to try and track, locate animals, right? And in this case, the dogs were trained for several weeks smelling Sumatran rhino poop, dung. And they're able to do that because this is also where you have a population of captive rhinos, where we have 11 captive rhinos right now that are breeding of Sumatran rhinos. And so they train the dogs on that. And then they set the dogs loose into Way Cambus, obviously with people with them. And the dogs found what we believe is Sumatran rhino dung, which, if proven, is really good and kind of huge information, because that means there might be a couple left, probably not beyond single digits, you know, where there's probably not a large population, but there might be a few left that could potentially be captured and brought into captivity and add to our captive program. The captive program is really our lifeline for saving this species right now, because there are so few in the wild. And the population in Way Cambus is probably not large enough to sustain itself anymore.
You mean you won't be able to breed them?
Yeah, they won't be able to breed enough. You know, if you have, let's say, best case scenario, you have 4 or 5 rhinos, that's not enough rhinos to keep up a population over the long term. Sumatran rhinos have a 16-month gestation, so they breed really slowly. And there's also concern about poachers. You know, there's poaching is a very lucrative, if you can get away with it, thing around rhinos. And we know that, you know, that's been going on for centuries, for thousands of years, really, for their horn. And so, you know, you get one poaching gain in Way Cambus, and those, you know, however many rhinos are potentially just gone. So the idea would be, let's bring them into heavily secured, you know, captive breeding, and let's use them to make more baby rhinos and basically add to our insurance population that these species won't go extinct. And maybe, hopefully, the idea is someday you'll be able to re-release rhinos from this captive breeding program back into the wild.
And over in Java, why don't you give us a snapshot of where the numbers are? They've dropped, but they've dropped before, so this isn't necessarily as dire, it sounds like. Is that correct?
Yeah, so like the Javan rhinos exist in a single location in Ujan Kulon Park, which is a peninsula of Java, a pretty remote area. I have not visited, but the footage and, you know, it looks beautiful. It's also lowland rainforest right on the coast. And they've been there for, that's the last place they've been. Both of these animals used to spread all over Asia, but they've been contracted to these very small places due to poaching and habitat loss. So the Javan rhino exists in this one place. In the past, there was like back in, I think it was the 40s, there was only like 20 animals. And over the decades, we managed, conservationists and the Indonesian government managed to build that up. And a few years ago, we had as many as 76, which is a big success. But, you know, again, we're talking about just 76 animals in a single location. And so tragically, what happened is that, you know, they had a high of about 76 animals, and then two poaching gangs got in there. Local poachers, basically, but with weapons, with maps, with, you know, good tracking. And they got in there and they have killed, we think, 26 animals. So basically a third of the population gone within a year or two. They were, the poaching was, you know, eventually, the poachers were found out, new security measures were put in place. A number of them were caught. But you can't really repair the damage quickly. The Javan rhino is also slow breeding. And so it will take probably decades to get back to just 76 animals from right now. They estimate there's about 50 animals. And unlike the Sumatran rhino, these animals are relatively well monitored. They have camera traps all over this park. They're constantly there. The good news is that they do have evidence of recent breeding, so they get camera traps of a mother and a calf. So these animals are really well monitored. So the numbers we have on these animals is a lot more accurate than what we have on Sumatran rhinos, just like, because they basically can account like, oh, this is an individual. We can tell because of certain different, you know, maybe a scar here or different, just the way it looks, like these patrol guys can, really tell the difference between different individual animals. But that was a real blow to the conservation efforts for this species. I'm a lone rhinoceros. There ain't one hell of a lot of us left in this world. I stand alone in my concrete cell, where people stare and toss me coke cans. I guess it's better than being poached, but I'd give my horn just to see my homeland. I'm a lone rhinoceros. There ain't one hell of a lot of us.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Jeremy Hance. He's a senior contributing editor at Manga Bay. So, Jeremy, let's talk about the core problem with protecting these animals, which is this insatiable desire by the marketplace for these, for their horns and the poaching industry. I was just thinking when we were talking about these sniffer dogs in Sumatra and how poaching is still a problem, it's like, well, if the dogs can't even find them and these poachers can, why not pay the poachers to come find them and make up any kind of financial difference you can to protect these animals? I don't know like how lucrative poaching is, but it sounds like it's physically possible for people to find them if they're going out and killing them. Has that been done at all, like engaging some poachers in order to use them to find rhinos, similar to what the FBI might do with some ex con men or something, that they bring them in to, you need a thief to catch a thief, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't know if it's been done with rhinos so much, but I know that there are a number of, you know, people who used to be poachers who eventually become park rangers, right? People who used to hunt illegally that eventually get on staff. And a lot of that is, again, these people know the forest. They know it well. But you have to find someone who is willing to make that change. The problem with the rhino horn is that it's so lucrative. I mean, it's basically a small fortune.
Can you give us an idea of how it works? Have you followed the supply chain at all?
The supply chain is basically, the two largest buyers right now of rhino horn is China and Vietnam.
But walk us through like a poacher capturing a rhino and then all the way to it actually being ingested.
Sure. So basically, I'll use the Javan rhino as an example because that's where the poaching has happened. We don't know if Sumatran rhinos are being poached. It's really, again, they're so remote. We can barely find them, so it's harder. The Javan rhino poachers, though, they lived in the area. The park is not that large. You have, 76 animals that are well monitored on camera traps. And what we think happened, what Manga Bay reported on about a year ago, is that they think that the poachers had an inside man. They think that they had somebody on staff that was kind of helping them. So what they would do is they, like I said, they had good equipment, they had guns, they had maps, they knew the area really well. They would sneak into the park. If they found, like I said, there's camera traps everywhere. So what they would do with camera traps is they would destroy them. You know, if you got caught on a camera trap as a poacher with your gun, you would take the camera trap, and crush it. And that was initially literally like how this sort of came to light is like patrol rangers started to find broken camera traps. And then they started to find camera traps that showed armed individuals. Now, armed individuals doesn't necessarily mean rhinos, right? Like people will come in and the bird trade, for example, in Indonesia is huge, right? So, they might have been coming in for birds.
Are there tigers?
Not in that population, no. In Sumatra, there are, really rare. But so but we think they probably had somebody on the inside. That's not confirmed, but that's one of the theories. And our investigation at Manga Bay kind of leaned towards that end. And so then basically they knew where the rhinos were. And they knew where the rhinos were so well that they would target male rhinos because the horns are bigger. So you go in there, you shoot a rhino, you cut off its head or its face, basically, to get the horns. Sometimes they will use, this is kind of gruesome, but they'll use like a machete or like some kind of mechanical chainsaw type thing. But they cut off the horns. And then what they had is they had a middleman in Java who would basically, they would transport, they'd take these horns home, they'd hide them, they'd meet with this guy, they'd give him the horns, they would get paid a certain amount of money, then the middleman gets the horns to a Chinese or Vietnamese or whoever. Like, rhino horn is not ingested in, like, it's not popular in Indonesia. At least from what I've read, it's much more China. I mean, so the reason why I want rhino horn is so valuable is it's in Chinese traditional medicine, and it's believed to sort of be a cure-all. It's believed to reduce fevers. It's believed to sort of do all these different things, right? Research shows that it's essentially rhino horn is made out of keratin. So it's like your fingernails. It's like ingesting fingernails, basically. It probably doesn't have any medicinal impact at all, scientifically. It might have slight things, but nothing really akin to what it's believed to have. It's also can be incredibly toxic. It can have different buildups of different minerals that can be toxic. But because it's in Chinese traditional medicine, going back thousands of years, it's really hard to break people's belief and say, you've been raised to think that rhino horn will cure your fever or cure your cancer or whatever. It's really hard to break that belief. The other problem that has started to come up is like it's also becoming sort of a status symbol, right? Especially I think in Vietnam, but in China as well. Like if you're super rich and, you go out partying, you drink a lot, and you go home and you snort some rhino horn, or maybe you do it in the club as sort of like a, hey, look, I'm super rich. Look what I can do. This is going to cure my hangover, right? This rhino horn. So that's sort of where it becomes so difficult because it's worth so much. I mean, it's worth a small fortune.
What is like one rhino horn weigh and what does it end up being worth in street value?
Sure. It's more valuable by weight than gold, typically. Again, this is not the middleman you're selling it to. That's going to be less money, but this is like the final price, right? The middleman's going to take their cut. It can range from in Asia, it's about $60,000 per pound. Typically, a rhino horn can weigh around 6 pounds in Asian rhinos. And you have to remember, like, different rhinos have different size horns, right? And it can depend on the age of the rhino and the sex of the rhino. The male rhinos for Javan rhinos have larger horns. Javan rhinos have a single horn. Sumatran rhinos have double horns, right? White rhinos and black rhinos in Africa have double horns. So it really depends. But that's, you know, if you're talking about $60,000 at the end of this for a horn that weighs maybe 5 pounds, you know, that's a lot of money. That's an incredible amount of money. And then we're talking about poachers who are living in a developing country in small villages. You know, selling a rhino horn is basically like like winning the lottery a little bit, right? That's why these people are willing to do this. You know, it's not an easy or I think it's a dangerous activity. I mean, most of these guys at least have been caught and tried and are serving time in jail right now and are being, you know, and paying hefty fines. So it didn't work out for them in the end. But you can see why people would risk it.
You need rhino skin if you're gonna begin to walk through this world. You need elephant balls if you don't wanna crawl on your hands through this world. Of my pain would you feel? You need eagle's wings.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Jeremy Hance. He is a senior contributing editor at Manga Bay. So, Jeremy, we're talking about rhino poaching. Can we look to the ivory trade and the history of trying to conserve elephants who have been prized for their tusks over the decades as a template for helping preserve these rhinos? As you're explaining it, it seems like the demand for it is rooted in ignorance. Like, there's no real reason for that. I mean, if there was some drug that couldn't be synthesized in a lab, or it's basically the belief in magic which is spurring these crazy prices.
Yeah, it's a belief in the magical power of rhino horn, and the real rhino horn is actually potentially like can make you sick. Right. So it's not a rash. It's, you know, and again, this goes back to thousands of years of this belief. It's really hard to change. So the fight to save elephants is an interesting one. The thing is that ivory can be replaced with other materials and with fake ivory. So it's a little easier in some ways.
How does somebody know they're getting real rhino horn anyway, if it's just keratin?
They're just taking it on faith, but they're willing to pay that out of the belief, right? And humans, we tell ourselves mythologies and stories all the time. If your kid is sick and you're like, this is going to cure them, they're willing to believe it, right?
And we won't even get into religion.
No, that's what's one of the interesting things is it's not so much religion as it is these old remedies that go back thousands of years, some of which are real, like some of which have, like, you know, it's not like all Chinese traditional medicine is bunk. Like, some of it does have real scientific value.
Acupuncture, for example, has been proven to relieve pain for some ailments.
100%.
We're not excoriating Chinese traditional medicine, but that element of the buying market is somehow really doing significant damage to some of the most fragile creatures on the planet.
100%. So there are different modes of what do we do? How do we save these animals? There's the idea of, okay, we add lots of guards. We turn this into basically a security situation. And we do everything we can to protect them. And you know, that's what was happening in Ujjain-Kulon with the Javan rhino. And it was actually working pretty well for decades. And then all of a sudden, again, just a few poachers get in there and they can do that kind of damage in a short amount of time. Another track that's being tried by like groups like Traffic is to try and change minds and hearts. It's to try and get that information out, to try and basically decrease this belief.
Is there a way to preserve the animals themselves without their horns? I think I've seen them in South Africa without their horns.
There are animals that have been dehorned. There's a couple, and that, you know, again, like, it can be effective, But because it's worth so much, even if you take off the horn, if you don't get the full base of the horn, which would then injure the animal, people will still kill for that base of the horn, right? It's kind of crazy. But it is one way to like slow down, stop poachers. There's a couple issues with it. One is that rhinos do use their horns, like, and behaviorally, they dig with their horns. They will buck each other with their horn. Like, it's a part of the animal. So taking that part of the animal away does change behavior and does change how they live. The other issue is that we all, like, people love rhinos in part because of their horns. Like, it's the most identifiable part of the animal, right? We all, whenever we think of rhino, whatever rhino we're thinking of, we have a horn. When children draw a rhino at the age of 3, they draw a horn, right? So you can imagine in places where rhinos in, like, say, Africa or India, where there's a lot of rhino tourism, people are going to be upset if they go and see rhinos and there's no horns, you know, and the tour groups, you know. So it's a controversial idea, one that really hasn't been that tried. But that idea is to, like, destroy the horns. There's other groups that have said we should cut off the horns and sell it. Like, and there are people who have tried to do this. Basically, like, what if we farmed rhinos and then took their horns and sell it? There's a recent person in South Africa, I can't recall his name, who has recently been caught doing this. You know, he had a bunch of rhinos. He was advocating for this process. But it turns out on the back end, he was also doing it himself, right? He was selling the rhino horn, which is very illegal in South Africa, right? Like, it's one thing to have rhinos in a sort of a zoo-like setting and to be breeding them. It's another thing to, like, be selling their horn.
And it's totally feeding into the root of the problem.
And that's the problem with, I mean, again, maybe this would be effective. Maybe, but the idea is, oh, well, this would just feed into the problem. It would just make the market larger. It would mean more people could afford it. And it would be a never-ending, you know, process of raising rhinos on farms and then taking off their horns and selling their horns and raising them kind of like cattle. And, you know, I think most conservationists sort of shudder at that idea. And would it really stop rhino poaching in the wild is an open question, because they're also, this is going to sound kind of crazy, right? But, like, in these countries, when they're going after wild, like, for bear bile is another very potent and sought after material for Chinese traditional medicine. There are farms of bears where they extract the bile in really violent ways. But people will pay more for wild bear bile, because it's from the wild, right? It's not farmed. So you can see where it would be like, okay, yeah, you're farming rhinos, but people will pay more for the more pure product, pure in quotation marks, of a wild rhino. So we don't know that it would actually solve anything.
Well, the work that you and your colleagues do at Manga Bay does a lot to highlight these problems, and I appreciate the work you do. Jeremy Hance from Manga Bay, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by March 4th, Adrian Ballou, and Tom Petty.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.